making contact with the spirit world. Spiritualism is more than just a belief in the ability of mediums to communicate with the spirits of the dead. It was a religion that prospered in the mid-19th and 20th centuries and grew to attract some 8 million followers. One important enclave of the movement was at Camp Etna in Maine, where spiritualists first gathered before the Civil War and still convene today. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we'll talk with the author of a book that chronicles the history of Camp Etna and its ongoing presence as a meeting ground for mediums and other spiritualist practitioners. We'll also talk with psychic mediums about the work they do and how they see the spirit world. And as always, we want to hear from you, the long tradition of spiritualism in Maine, today on Maine Calling. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Did you know that there is a place in Maine that has been home to spiritualists and mediums since 1876? Today we're going to talk about Camp Etna and the world of psychics, mediums, mystics, and spiritualists. My guests are Barbara Williams. She's a professional psychic medium, healer, and medical intuitive who lives in Maine. Mira Patasin is the author whose new book is The In-Betweens, The Spiritualists, Mediums, and Legends of Camp Etna. And on the line with us from Vermont is Christina Solari. She's a Unitarian Universalist minister and shamanic practitioner. As always, we want to hear from you. The number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. So, yes, this is Halloween, and so maybe that's the peg, as we say in the business, for this particular topic today. But for you, Barbara in particular, and our other guest from Vermont, who I think will be joining us by phone here in a moment, this is not an annual novelty topic. This is a belief system, a religion, a way of seeing and interacting with the world. And it embraces this idea that spirits of the dead are very real and can give us important information if we know how to ask them. So I want to start by getting our terms right when we say you're a psychic medium, but psychic and medium are have their own definitions. And there's one way of saying this that I read about in preparation for this, which is that all mediums are psychic, but not all psychics are medium. Let's start there and explain the difference between the two.
Okay, that's very true what you said. Psychics pick up information from around the auric field of the person. So mediums do that. The difference is mediums are able to traverse both this world and the next world and talk to the spirits of the dead, okay? Which means that your relatives, your friends, all those around you we can communicate with, which means we have to elevate our energy in order to be able to communicate with that. There is some psychic information sometimes that will come through, but a lot of times it will come through the spirits or our spirit guides in order to give you information about what's going on with you or what will happen with you in the future. But one of the biggest importance I feel for mediums is to be able to validate who they have by talking about their certain bullet points. You need the personality, you need the physical descriptor, you need what their relationship was, not just like a vague persona. I have an older man in your energy and it feels kind of like, you know, that's very vague. You want to get as specific as possible because you are talking with a person who is deceased, and you are bringing forward that information to someone who's here.
So what does that energy or that spirit look like?
It can be very different. I happen to be clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairgustans, you know, I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse with all of that. Mm-hmm. Just I've been that way all my life, so I don't really know any different. I also...
Clairvoyant.
Clairvoyant means that you can see spirit.
And clairaudient.
You can hear spirit.
Makes sense. Sure.
You can sometimes even taste some of the foods that they happen to... Like, I love when grandmothers come in. Because a lot of times grandmothers are wonderful cooks, and I can tell whether they were bakers, they were cooks, you know, what their specialty items that they were really proud of. And, you know, not everybody bakes. Some are just wonderful cooks. And there also have been occasions where some are not wonderful cooks, and that comes through too, because you can taste the burning. You know, everything they made was burned or really bad, but it was their earmark. So it can be funny.
So if Mira is sitting next to you, and she wants to know how her brother is doing, for example, who passed when
correct.
He was a child. How do you reach him, or
A lot of times they're already present and they're standing near you. Many people already know. Well, they don't really connect the dots. A lot of people know. So, like for instance, Mira's brother. She may think about him occasionally and just think it's a random thought. What people don't realize is a lot of times those random thoughts are actually the person coming closer to them that are communicating with them.
When did you realize you had this ability? And do you see it as another sense?
It is. It just means we're not dimensionally challenged. So that means that we see in multiple dimensions rather than in flat. Here, right now. I've always been able to do that. I mean, I remember back as early as 10 months old. It used to freak me out a little bit because it seems like there was already always a party in my room. And when I wanted to sleep, I wanted to sleep, and it would get really noisy. So I would sometimes sneak out at night and go to other places in the house that were quieter and just lay down on the floor and sleep.
I was gonna say, for people who can see spirits, and I would guess that there would be spirits everywhere, the world must look very crowded and be very noisy.
It is. It is very crowded. But, you know, they're not necessarily everywhere, but there are spiritual imprints a lot of places. Now, a spiritual imprint doesn't necessarily mean that there is a spirit there, but energy never dies. It's neither created nor destroyed. So an imprint would be something that happened again and again and again in a location. So you could pick up those spiritual imprints, but you can't communicate with it.
And when you're communicating with the spirit, are you hearing English? Are you hearing words?
That was interesting. That actually came up last night from a lady who did not speak English. And yet I could hear her perfectly because she's communicating in my mind, so I could understand everything she was saying, and yet I knew with her accent, there was no way I could speak that language, okay?
I want to bring in by phone from Vermont, Christina Solari, who is a minister of the First Parish in Church in Portland since 2010, also a shamanic practitioner who works with the unresolved dead. Christina, welcome to the program. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, it's good to be on again.
Yeah. So explain this, the unresolved dead, and what you do in your work with
them. So the unresolved dead are discarnate spirits, people who have died often from some sort of traumatic death, who have not moved on.
Mm-hmm. And how do you work with them?
Well, typically those spirits are spirits who I'm midwifing through a death process, or spirits who are attached to a person who is living. And the way I connect with them is through going into an altered state of consciousness.
Okay, and how do you do that?
Typically, I do it with a drum or a rattle. So the drum or the rattle is a powerful tool to shift the brainwaves that help me relax in a certain way so I can tune in to the other dimensions that Dr. Barbara was talking about.
And does this come from a traditional practice, or is it a modern practice? Where does it come from?
It's a very old practice. I mean, it's a shamanic practice that is very ancient. We know from archaeological evidence that the practice dates back at least 40,000 years, and some anthropologists believe that the practice is over 10,000 years old. So it's a lot of indigenous people use the practice all over the world, and it was brought to the United States by different neo-shamans who have taught many people how to do this journey process and the various practices within shamanism that can help people.
And so in addition to helping the unresolved dead, you also assist the dying to move on. Can you explain that?
So because of my work in ministry and in my own personal life, I've been present for many people who are in the death process. And sometimes people will have a hard time moving through that portal. And if I have permission from them or a family member, I can go on a shamanic journey and find out what is going on that is preventing them from moving on.
Okay, I want to bring in Mira here, who's been waiting patiently.
Sure. No, it's fascinating to hear these women talk. That's why I wrote a book on it.
and I'll just check in with you quick. We're going to take a quick break,
sure.
And we'll come back in a moment. But Mira, you set out to chronicle this enclave that we mentioned at the top of the show, Camp Etna, which had become this kind of mecca, I guess, for spiritualists. And as you point out very early in the book, spiritualism is not just this umbrella term for people engaging in these practices, but it was a religion.
Mm-hmm. And it still is.
And still is, that emerged, though, in the with these other roots, though, in very old traditions in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
But why, from whence did it emerge? I mean, these things come from somewhere, and I know that there were a few people that were central to this.
Right. Well, I think we're looking for, to pinpoint a date, and the modern spiritualist movement was given the birth date of March 31st, 1848, I believe. But talking to the dead is something, or what happens after you die, it seems like it's a timeless thing. And people say often, we're spirits having a brief human experience. There's some phrase that goes like that. So I think it's almost impossible to pinpoint when it was really birthed and where the practices come from, because a lot of these practices are given a home, or they're within a certain culture. But if you look around, all the religions, I mean, religion is man-made, but all the practices we're doing, we're all kind of reaching the same goal, just with different kinds of tools and methods, from table tipping to going to a Catholic church to lighting a fire to drumming a drum. It's all kind of the same, trying to get us out of the chatter in our head and to reach something that's beyond us.
But spiritualism, the popularity was possibly driven by this, what it offered people who were desperately trying to reach a lost loved one.
Yes.
In the grieving process that they couldn't get through just prayer and conventional
right.
religion.
It was kind of a perfect timing when the modern spiritualist movement was birthed, because it was right before the Civil War, when the United States lost thousands and thousands of souls all at once, and people were looking for some way to cope with their grief. And I think we haven't had anything that huge in a long time, but anytime there's such a great loss, people look for another way. And rather than just to go directly to a priest or just to cross your fingers, they found a way that had already sort of started a few years before, of just going directly by yourself to contact a loved one.
The Civil War, the immense losses of the Civil War fueled this as well.
Yes, definitely.
What's also interesting is the other social forces that propelled it, or that it propelled, which was this sort of this feminism.
Yeah.
There were other major social issues,
sure.
Abolition of slavery,
sure.
that spiritualism helped to move.
Sure. It was a great combo for a religion, kind of like a trampoline. But so spiritualism, so to make a long story short, that is a book. These two sisters, Margaret and Kate Fox, around the 1848, they claimed that they could communicate with a spirit that was living inside their bedroom walls. And they told their mother, and they demonstrated to their mother. Then they showed their neighbors, and the neighbors told their friends. And soon the town was interested in learning about the Fox sisters. And the girls' popularity grew and grew and grew. And just up the street from their home in Hydesville, New York, women's rights convention was happening up the street, and they caught wind of the Fox sisters, and not only were they impressed because there are these two girls communicating with the dead, they were really impressed because these were two girls who were speaking from their intuition and from their gut in front of a large group of people. And this is something people were not used to seeing. They were used to seeing white men stand on a stage and tell us how it is. And instead, these were, you know, second-class citizens talking about something that they really didn't have a scientific proof, or it wasn't a capitalist venture. It was girls talking about seeing something that no one else could see. And so the suffragettes soon started backing these Fox sisters. The abolitionists were backing these Fox sisters because they were stepping out of this patriarchal society and owning their own things. And for them to not let a man usurp the place of God, and women and minorities taking back their rights was something really phenomenal. So in addition, and then shortly after that, there was the Civil War. So it was just this big explosion of things, and it put spiritualism on the map. And within, I'd say, 30 years of the Fox sisters, who sort of disappeared into the background, spiritualism was a religion. There were camps everywhere, and there were millions and millions and millions of followers in the United States and Europe.
And so take us then to Camp Etna. How does Etna appear in this timeline?
So Camp Etna appears, the birth of Camp Etna, 1876. And Camp Etna wasn't the only summer camp that had started, but it was a lot of things happening at once. But as the spiritualist movement was growing, one thing that set spiritualism apart was its resistance to organize, resistance to have a hierarchy and a leader and hierarchical positions. But one thing that also happened was people were trying to organize it into some kind of, you know, president, vice president, hierarchical positions. So people split away from different organizations and started forming their own summer camps and communities and churches. But the summer camps just offered a place for people to come during the weekends or during the summers, 4 weeks, to get away from their jobs, take a train into the woods somewhere and go on a boat ride, maybe have a campfire, have a cookout, and communicate with the dead. And Camp Etna was one of those places. And back in the day, during its prime, Camp Etna had its own train depot, and up to 10,000 people would come every summer to stay at Camp Etna to practice their skills of communication with the dead. And it was a huge, huge, huge camp, and I'm still kind of stunned as to how it became so big. But I think the reason was there were two reasons. A lot of people from Boston, Philadelphia were coming over, getting into the woods of Maine, and also there were some really phenomenal speakers that came to Camp Etna and led the camp, which you can read about that in the in-betweens. But one of the women who was kind of the matriarch of Camp Etna was also, she was from Brooklyn, New York, and she was also a medium to the Tsar of Russia. So he brought her to Russia to be her his kind of right-hand medium for a while.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about a little bit more about the history of Etna, but also what's happening there today, and much more about spiritualism. The number to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Farmland Trust, celebrating 20 years of growing the future for farming. Share your stories and get involved at MaineFarmlandTrust20th.org. As you know, when the sun starts going down today, the little goblins, ghosts, and fairies will start roaming around our neighborhoods looking for that next big candy score. You'll see them on sidewalks, but also on streets, and sometimes the excitement and the costumes can distract a bit, so please drive slowly and carefully. If you're out and driving this evening, do be careful and vigilant. Young goblins and monsters will be going door to door with their attention focused on candy bags and not your car in the street. All Evergreen sustaining supporters of Maine Public receive a member card with access to the Maine Public Member Card mobile app for both Apple and Android devices. Simply search your app store for Member Card. With the Maine Public Member Card mobile app on your smartphone, you'll be set to save no matter where you are. It's easy to locate the closest participating businesses and restaurants. There are over 500 of them. Everything you need to know is available with a tap on your phone. You can also show your phone on the spot to redeem the offer. No need to even carry the card with you. Go to MainePublic.org for all the details about the Maine Public Member Card.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, Maine's psychic medium and mystic community. My guests are Unitarian Universalist minister and shamanic practitioner Christina Solari. Mira Patasin is the author of The In-Betweens, The Spiritualists, Mediums, and Legends of Camp Etna. She's also the author of the memoir Pour Your Soul, and she teaches memoir writing to women at the Maine Correctional Center. And Barbara Williams is a psychic medium, healer, and medical intuitive. She teaches psychic development throughout Maine and enjoys helping people open up to their psychic abilities. We invite you to join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We were talking before the break about this rich history of Camp Etna, Barbara, but it's still functioning, going gangbusters, still operating. What's going on there now? What is the role of Camp Etna these days?
So Camp Etna, I'm on the board of directors, by the way. It is still actually doing better than ever. What happens in Camp Etna is we usually start around May, and we will bring in mediums from around the world, one a week, and then we will supplement from all the wonderful mediums and psychics and healers that we already have on camp. So we have very full programs. We also have housing that, you know, of course, when you step through the arches at Camp Etna, you notice a difference in the environment. It feels kind of like you're stepping back in time, and you look around at some of the houses. Some of them are run down. Some of them are, you know, being redone and rehabbed, and they're adorable. They're these beautiful gingerbread little cottages that are just filled with potential. And we do church services there. There are other church services throughout Maine. Etna happens to be the oldest camp. There's also Temple Heights in Madison. But Etna happened to retain, we still have 27 acres, so we have a lot of acreage. We have healing rocks. We're on Etna Pond. So it's a place that you could go to repose or use as a retreat or just come for a class here and there. You know, we do circles. We do readings. You know, we bring things to a more concrete level here and now. It's not all obbly-goobly, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very real, you know, yeah. And the people there are very real. There are excellent mediums that reside at camp.
Christina Solari, have you been involved at Camp Etna? Are you familiar with it at all?
I have not. I am familiar with it. Mm-hmm. I would love to spend some time there, but I have been to the spiritual church in Westbrook. I actually brought our youth group there. Mm-hmm. From First Parish, and when I was in my 20s and just beginning my study of shamanic work and when the dead started talking to me, I would go to the spiritualist church in Watertown, Massachusetts, near where I lived, and I would go to that service, and it's a very powerful experience.
I don't want to go too much more into the show without getting to how some of you respond to skeptics. I'm sure you're confronted by skeptics in the course of doing your work. Christina, I'll start with you. How do you respond to people who say, I'm sorry, I just don't believe in any of this. It sounds...
not everybody does. And, you know, I will be honest and say that throughout my life, I've been very anxious about putting myself out there as a shamanic practitioner, as someone who believes in other dimensions and different realities, because of the past, our recent past of, people being killed for this type of thing. So it is challenging to put oneself out there, but I feel I'm in my power in it, and I'm clear about who I am and what my practices are, and I feel like I have a lot of protection from my spirit teachers and guides. So I'm no longer afraid to put myself out there. I love having conversations with people about this. With skeptics, I go to the personal experience of their relationship with people who have died or any kind of experiences they have had in, other realities. It could even be a dream. And once you start talking to someone, you start to see that everybody has had some kind of experience that helps them understand that we are not just physical beings in this world.
Barbara, let me ask you, is part of how you respond to skeptics, depending upon their...
I love skeptics.
Is part of your belief system, though, does it carry with it an obligation to respond in a certain way and not respond in a negative way?
No, every person's different. And I don't expect you to believe me. I expect you to believe your own experiences, your own feelings. But I think skepticism is completely healthy. I'm skeptical myself. So when I have people come to camp to teach, when I used to actually do the whole program for about 6 years on my own, and one of the criteria I had is I never hired someone that I didn't go see and watch them practice because I wanted honesty. I wanted truly what was there, not some gobbledygook, not some show person that, studied acting and wanted to put on a good show. And there are a lot out there.
I was going to say, is there a tension within the community about policing your own?
No, there isn't. That's a me thing, just because I'm a purist. But I don't. And the same with my practice in the paranormal and for crossing spirits. I've introduced, my husband and I, Steve Williams, have introduced a lot of people in that arena for the first time on how to communicate with spirit and help them cross over. That's just what we do. That was our purpose.
Mary, you entered into this...
little did she know.
But you entered in as a journalist, and by nature, journalists are skeptics. Yes. How would you characterize, what you experienced at Aetna and the course of researching this book, and how did that, if at all, change your skepticism or put you in a different place than maybe you had set out?
Sure. It was very difficult to find a balance between wearing my journalism hat versus wearing my human hat and my mother hat and my woman in the 21st century hat. It was a lot because as I was speaking with people at Camp Aetna, there were a lot of things that drew me there, not just a great story or a great potential book. The things that kind of prompted me to go to Camp Aetna were an amalgamation of a lot of personal things that were happening in my life. I was a new mom. And when you become a mother, you, at least my experience is you become very primitive and you become very cosmic at the same time. And it's not something I was used to, not something I was prepared for, and not something that I think is very supported by modern society. And so that was happening. And also, you know, I've lost a child. I've lost a brother. I'm no stranger to grief. Not many people are. That was something that was happening in addition to me going in as a journalist. So when I entered Camp Etna as a journalist, I tried very hard to be objective. But it's very hard to be objective when you're in a seance with just one other person and that person is reading you and telling you, you know, I have someone here for you. You know, do I want to believe it or not? How do I prove this? At the same time, watching these women of Camp Etna, the woman and mother and me would step forward and see how this was a new way of living. Women had, you know, they had lived their whole lives according to their intuition, or at least up until they got to Camp Etna, or their intuition had brought them to Camp Etna. So they kind of said, screw what society expects of me. I'm going to be a woman who runs with the wolves. And so many, many different parts of me were changed after spending approximately 5 years on and off with the spiritualists of Camp Etna. And I've had so many experiences since being there in terms of mingling with the afterlife that I can't say I'm a skeptic, but like Barbara said, she's a medium. She sees the dead all the time and she's still a skeptic. Yeah. But I've had some amazing experiences there as a journalist. I mean, the story could write itself. The story practically did. But it was as a journalist, as a mother, as a woman, as a person, I definitely was changed.
I want to go to the phones now to Sonny Robinson, who, for disclosure, is a friend. Hello, Sonny.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Good, good, good. I believe you're on a bus coming north, so hope you can. Sonny is a psychic medium, a rock and roll drummer, and an artist as well. But, Sonny, just tell us, the group, the listeners here, a little bit about your work, briefly, what you do and what you do for people.
Okay. Well, basically, what I am is I communicate to those on the other side, as well as people that are actually living here now. And basically, my messages will come through people that are on the other side, who are watching over people that they love, past, present, and future. So basically, I'll go through, I'll sit in front of the people or a group, and I'll go over health issues or I'll go over, you know, people that have passed or things that they should be looking out for, certain goals, stuff like that. Plus, I also really like to push the magic aspect of it and the quantum physics side of it and, you know, thoughts become things and those kind of things as well. Try to, you know, it's basically a very empowering thing to do.
Do you this is something that you figured out you had as a kid?
Yeah, my grandmother was a clairvoyant at 12 and
and there's the bus problem there. I think we've lost.
She would just
Sonny, sorry. We're going to have to drop you. Anyway, nice to talk to you, Sonny. Let's take a couple of other calls here before we have to take a break. Let's go to Liza in Waldeboro. Hi, Liza.
Oh, hi there. How are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, here's my story. I'm an emergency room nurse. I've been one for many years, and I live in this area, Mid-Coast, Maine. And I've had a lot of strange encounters with people who have passed over. And I am the most pragmatic person in the world. I'm an emergency room nurse. We just get it done. We had a four-year-old brought into our emergency room about 4 years ago, terrible accident. And I was one of the team that were trying to revive this little one. I had the code card. I was over against the wall in the trauma room. We had a lot of people surrounding the child on the cot. Mm-hmm. And we could not save this little kid. Mm-hmm. About a few seconds after we pronounced the child dead, deceased, whatever, I felt my lab coat tugged. I was against the wall, actually yanked down. And I looked around, and there was nothing there. I ignored it. I started putting things away, and it happened again really harder. And, you know, you just really have to, you take a pause and you say, okay, this really is happening. Afterwards, we had a debriefing, and, you know, it was, everybody was crying when I told them the story, because it's such a traumatic time. But to know deep in your bones that this is not the end, and this is a message that they're letting you know, I can go, I'm okay, goodbye. So that's just one of many that I've had. But
Liza,
yeah.
Thanks very much for sharing that story. Barbara, this is a lot of emotion. And
Liza, I have been a nurse for 44 years. I always stop at accidents, and I always help people cross over in the emergency room and sometimes at the side of the road. So I understand how that works, and that's a very, very emotional time. And it's something that does need a lot of debriefing when it does come in, and you have any of the emergency, God bless emergency workers, because they deal with this all the time. So it is very impactful, and thank you for doing what you do.
Yeah. Christine, I was going to ask you if you wanted to comment right before we take a break here.
Comment on?
Just the call. I think what's interesting about the call is this is a person who's describing her almost, she seemed to be saying, look, I'm an average person, I'm not, you know.
Right. Well, that's the whole point, is when just a person who has no experience in any of this type of connection with the dead or with spirits, when they have one, they change the way they think about life, and it does bring people hope, because it's one way of understanding that we are not just our bodies, that we are spirits that come through our bodies, come onto the earth for a short time, and then we move on. But we still exist. And I think most of us who love the people in our lives that die want to know that we're still connected to them somehow. And so when you have that experience, even if it's not with somebody that you know or love, it gives you hope in an afterlife.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. Thank you for that. We'll take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. The number to join the conversation is 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine energy audit and insulation rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Engine, presenting the second annual York County Mini Maker Fair this Sunday. Details at yorkcounty.makerfair.com.
Residents in California have been evacuated multiple times in recent years due to smoke, fires, floods, and power outages.
Is this the way it's going to be every year? Apocalypse.
I'm Elsa Chang, how some are reconsidering whether California is the dream they had hoped for. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered this afternoon between 4 and 6:30 on Maine Public Radio.
On the next Speaking in Maine, a debate on universal health care in Maine.
We have to believe in each other's, I think, good-natured intentions on this type of thing. Otherwise, this debate will never go anywhere. Because I really do think that most people, when it comes to education, healthcare, are essentially the same in goals, but perhaps just have different philosophies on how to approach it.
Matt Gagnon of the Maine Heritage Policy Center and Phil Caper of Maine All Care discussed healthcare options for Maine. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine, Thursday afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall, and you're listening to a conversation today about psychics, mediums, and others in the spiritualist community of Maine. My guest, Christina Solari. She's a Unitarian, Universalist minister and shamanic practitioner. Barbara Williams, a psychic medium, healer, and medical intuitive. She organizes several different spiritual, paranormal, and psychic development classes throughout Maine, New Hampshire, and California. And Mira Patasan teaches memoir writing to women at the Maine Correctional Center and is the author of The In-Betweens, The Spiritualists, Mediums, and Legends of Camp Etna. Join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. We'll go back to the phones now to Antonio in Gray. Hi, Antonio. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you. It's Antonio here. My question is, in certain cultures, these stepping to the beyond or across the veil, it's very common and something that people, the majority of people, tend to believe. But when you go to other cultures, people who hear things, sometimes they are framed as being mentally unbalanced. And I'd like to hear from the panel about their experiences with cases like that, in which people are having a legit connection, but yet they are framed as such.
Yeah. Barbara?
Sure, I'll answer that. And sure, it can happen still in this country. I think there are many other countries that kind of have a better belief system than we do. If you go into the healthcare system and you tell them you're hearing voices, the only thing that will get you out of that is if you are connecting with someone they're related to and you can give every bullet point and descriptor of who you're talking to and prove that you haven't researched that. So that means, you know, not going in the internet and learning all about it. I mean, very clear and clean. I would really hesitate, and I know most of my friends are mediums. And you have to be very careful, you know, who you're talking and how you're doing it. It has to be in the right framework. It's not just, oh, I'm hearing that, because I have had a lot of adolescents brought to me. Their parents want me to evaluate whether they are mediumistic or schizophrenic. So one of the things that I can do, if I can tag into their energy, I can see and hear what they're doing. So sometimes they need to go on medication because what they're hearing is not healthy, not good. They don't have filters in place to keep them safe. So we need to keep them safe.
In your description, you're a medical intuitive. That doesn't mean that you diagnose illnesses. It means what?
I'm also a pranic healer, so I can go into the outer layers of the auric field. I can tell you where you've had old injuries. Sometimes you need to work on some health issues here and now. So there comes the educator in me, comes out and kind of says it in a way that'll be more palatable to you, not like the hammer of doom. We don't do death predictions and, you know, illness, you're going to get hurt. If I see someone or I have a student that's doing that, they get pulled off the stage. Not appropriate.
Does Etna or anyone know of courses that help people develop their...
Yes. There are quite a few mediums in Etna that have developmental courses. You know, I do, throughout the years, some of the mediums that are there in Etna I've taught, and they're exceptional mediums. They also do different things like Akashic Records. Akashic Records is tapping into the records that are written about all of us after we go. There's like a hall of records, so you can look into what your health would be, you know, predictions, sometimes about the future, but not neglecting the fact that we all have free will. So we have the power to change things that will happen.
And I'll open this to anyone, Christina, the panel, anyone. To what extent are people maybe, are people affected by having trauma in their life, major changes, particularly as children? Does that make them more open to these kinds of possibilities of I want to be careful of how I say this, but are they more open to this idea of the spiritual world? Are they more possibly in touch with it?
I would like
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to respond to that. From my perspective, a lot of the unresolved dead who are, in, from a shamanic perspective, are souls, spirits that haven't moved on, are hanging out, and they like sometimes to attach themselves to people. And so if you've had, if you are psychologically imbalanced or you've had certain traumas, you can attract these spirits, and they may indeed be speaking to you or affecting your life. And that's why it's important that the unresolved dead move on. They're not always negative or, you know, troublesome, but often they are. And shamanic practitioners can help people who have attachments of beings, have them released from themselves. So that's, yeah.
I'm not sure, but I took it as you were talking about trauma in our human experience in here and now.
Yes.
People have two choices. They can be victors or victims. So the victims sometimes will need a lot of counseling. The victors a lot of times will have what's called a near-death experience, and they can develop from that as they have been in touch a little bit more. They've had a touchstone. Sometimes not, because if they don't have the proper guidance, they don't know what to do with it. I've had people come to me and say, shut it off. I don't want to do this anymore. So in order, like anything, in order to learn how to shut it off, you have to go back and learn how to shut it on, turn it on, then you have a switch to shut it off, if you choose.
All right, let's go to Kathy in Rockland. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
I grew up in Aetna, and I lived about a mile away from there. And as a teenager, I decided to check it out. And so I ended up spending a lot of time there for a couple of summers. And I convinced a friend to go with me. And it was really, really interesting. They really embraced us because there were no other young people going at the time. It was mostly older people. So they loved having a couple of young teenagers there. And we used to have seances and classes. I think they called them meditations in the pines or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this was back in the early 70s, so it was really a wonderful place to be.
Kathy, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mira, I'm wondering about, again, to your experiences, this. Even if you remain skeptical about some of, or unable to tap maybe into the same things, or skeptical of some of the beliefs here, you would say that you did find in spiritualism some of the ideals that you embrace, this the importance of intuition, as you were talking about being a mother, of accepting maybe what you don't understand, of basic kindness, which seems to be part of it as well. So even if you don't, you have doubts about much of this, there's a lot in it, as you discovered, that you can embrace.
Sure. And I'm not saying this just because Barbara's sitting a few inches from me, but I lean more towards believing than I do skepticism. And I just think that's because, you know, as my husband and I always say, I'm not even sure of my own existence. But my experiences at Camp Aetna, there's nothing about my experiences there or the lifestyles of the women there that I don't agree with, and I didn't bring with me. Everyone is really self-guided. Everyone respects one another's practices. Everyone has a different outlook on how spiritualism operates. There's disagreements because we're humans, and I accept that too, and I embrace it. I think, and no pun intended, but when I went to Camp Aetna for the first time, I was on one side of the fence. And I was actually worried that spending so much time at Camp Etna, I would actually, move to Camp Etna. But I, now I've seen both extremes and I've found this happy medium in between my lifestyle before going to Camp Etna and my lifestyle now, where I actually do some of the practices that I've learned from Camp Etna. I meditate more. I call on spirit guides. I listen to the voices. Barbara even taught me just the mini candy bars of medium practices, like calling on your runners to find you a parking space. Barbara, I tell Barbara I love her all the time. We're friends. She's a bit of a mentor to me now, and she'll just encourage me if I say, I heard this, something told me to do it. It must have been the chatter in my brain. And she says, maybe not. That's not just the chatter of your brain. That's something telling you.
When you said calling on your runners, that was sort of like, if you there's a power in thinking if I will get a parking space. And you will get a parking space.
Yeah, it's not the same as manifestation. A runner is a spirit guide that actually will create that. But you need to be very clear when you ask for things. Like, I want a parking space right in front of the store that I can easily get to within 30 seconds of coming there.
All right. And try it. Everyone should try it today. And I swear it works.
Especially around Christmas.
All right. Let's do the parking experiment. With that, we're out of time. Thank you so much, all of you, for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mira Patasan is the author of the just released book, The In-Betweens, The Spiritualists, Mediums, and Legends of Camp Etna. Barbara Williams is a psychic medium, healer, and medical intuitive. She's an active participant in paranormal investigations and has a PhD in metaphysics. And Christina Solari is a Unitarian Universalist minister and shamanic practitioner. John Keimel ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources, by visiting maincalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8 o'clock. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.